Think about the last new word you learned. Where did you encounter it? Was it in a book, a text, or online? I know for me, I definitely looked up a word while I was reading recently. But that moment led me to a bigger question. Who decides that words, and specific words, even exist? And that's where things got interesting. Language isn't just a list of words. It's a system. It's a technology. It's something we all use every day. It's shaped by social norms, shaped by institutions, and even the communication tools in front of us. Now you might be thinking, so words aren't just words, they're decisions? Well, that's pretty much it. Every time we write, every time we read, post, or comment, maybe every time we share something, we're participating in a huge ongoing conversation about which words survive. It turns out it's much bigger than spelling or grammar. So, I want to welcome you to my podcast today. I'm Jonathan, and today we're exploring what language is. We're going to look at who influences it and why all of this matters. Along the way, I'll be asking some questions that I found myself asking throughout this research and throughout this course, and maybe the questions that you're wondering too. So, what exactly is language? Just rules? Words? Grammar? Or is it more than that? One thing I asked myself early on was, why does language even exist? Rastall reminds us that language exists because communities need it. It's not just a set of symbols, it's a social tool for sharing ideas, negotiating meaning, and solving problems together. In that sense, every word is almost like a small social contract. We all agree, at least loosely, on what it means and how to use it. And then there's a question of how language shapes thoughts. Boroditsky shows that words we use influence how we understand time, space, events, and even relationships. Some languages, for example, use absolute directions, north, south, east, west, instead of left or right. That changes how those speakers navigate the world. So even a single phrase can shift thinking in subtle ways. Language also changes with culture. Think about the word cloud. It used to refer only to something in the sky, a physical object you could point to. Now, in digital spaces, it just as easily means online storage or massive networks of data. Its meaning shifted because our tools and technologies shifted. And digital language adds even more layers. Think about terms like ghosting or Riz. Many of these haven't made it into the traditional dictionaries that we know, but they're widely understood in online communities. Language is also a living ecosystem. Each of us contributes to it, consciously or not, every time we communicate. And this leads us to an interesting question. Have you ever considered how the words you choose shape not only your message, but the way you're thinking? That's the key idea. Understanding this relationship changes how we read, write, and teach literacy. Historically, decisions about language weren't democratic at all. Authority over language lived with scholars, institutions, and political powers. Innes explained that oral communication creates immediacy, while writing promotes permanence. This influenced which words survived and which disappeared, often depending on who had the power to record them. Think about dictionaries. For a long time, they weren't neutral at all. Webster pushed to standardize American English, while Sam Johnson did the same for British English. Their decisions about spelling, pronunciation, and even which words counted as words shaped how millions of people learned to communicate. It was really like a tug of war over the identity of the English language. Language authority has also played a role in colonial contexts. Colonial powers often impose their languages on indigenous groups, sometimes erasing or suppressing local words entirely. So, controlling language has always been a political act as much as a social one. People in power had more influence over which words survived, but language has always resisted full control. Slang, dialects, code switching, and even variations thrive alongside formal rules. And today, the internet has become a massive counterforce. Communities online, not academics or institutions, often decide what becomes mainstream. A trending hashtag, a viral meme, or even a typo can suddenly become a cultural vocabulary. You've probably noticed how a phrase explodes online and almost overnight becomes something everyone recognizes. 6-7, am I right? That's digital power in action. Collective usage shaping what counts as language. Memes, hashtags, viral phrases, these aren't just jokes, they're linguistic tools. Bolter explains that digital writing reshapes composition entirely. Hyperlinks, tagging, replying, sharing, posting, all of these things amplify certain words and hide others. Nelson's structure paper argues that digital networks subtly guide where our attention goes, which has huge consequences for how language spreads. In other words, the software we're using isn't neutral. Platforms influence which words appear, which go viral, and which disappear into the algorithmic ether. Kress helps us understand this multimodality. Digital texts combine images, video, sound, design, and words, and meaning emerges from all those layers interacting. Think about a TikTok. A caption, a visual trend, a piece of audio, and timing all put together to communicate an idea. So even posting a single emoji can communicate meaning like a word, sometimes even more precisely. Every post, every share, every remix contributes to collective understanding. If you've ever seen a meme suddenly change the way people speak, you know what this looks like in real time. Language today is participatory. We all have influence, whether we're aware of it or not. So what actually counts as a word? Emojis? Abbreviations. GIFs? TikTok sounds. Increasingly, the answer is becoming yes to all of those. London Group introduced this idea of multiliteracies, that reading and writing now occur across multiple modes, not just alphabetic text. Dobson and Walensky show that digital literacy requires understanding, context, access, and meaning-making across platforms. The boundaries between word, symbol, image, and sound are blurring. Think of a selfie or a specific audio clip that signals a cultural idea. These become part of our shared vocabulary through community use, not institutional approval. Meaning is co-created. Communities decide what words count and not the dictionaries. Even small digital actions like posting, remixing a sound, using a trend caption template, these help shape words, which words thrive. Have you ever wondered why certain slang feels natural to you? That's language evolving through use, not prescription. Language isn't static, it's living, and it's shaped by all of us. So what does all of this mean for teaching and learning? Educators now face the challenge of preparing learners for multimodal digital environments. This brings in the debates by Lederoux and Smith around digitization, how converting information to digital formats increases access, but also alters what survives and how it's used. The focus is shifting from memorizing vocabulary to understanding systems of communication. Students need to be able to read across formats, text, audio, image, and platform context. When learners understand the historical, social, and technological forces shaping language, they might be able to gain some agency. They become conscious participants in shaping meaning, not just receivers of it. Language is a tool. It's a social system and a living thing. And the question, who decides which words we use, turns out to have multiple answers. Institutions decide, communities decide, technology decides, and we decide every time we communicate. It's empowering and maybe a little intimidating, but awareness is the key. Understanding the history, the theory, and the digital forces at play helps us participate more thoughtfully. We each play a part in deciding which words survive. Language is ours to shape, and that's the beauty of it. Thanks for going on this journey with me, and I hope we'll catch you again next time. Today's discussion drew on work by scholars including Bolter, Innes, Kress, Boroditsky, Nelson, Dobskin and Walensky, the New London Group, Lederoux, Smith, and Rasdahl. Together, their research provides a foundation for understanding how language, literacy, and technology shape one another. Of course, a full list of references are available on my web space. Thanks for listening.